Join the chorus. It's time for another North Melbourne Footy Club update with Dean Vasek and special guests on Hashtag Kangaroos.
Welcome to another episode. My name is Dean Vasek. You can find me on Twitter at Hashtag Kangas, or you can find me on Instagram at Hashtag Kangaroos Podcast. So today I was joined by Frank to do a review of our loss against GWS on Sunday. A lot of talk about our loss on Sunday, in particular Jason and Francis, and a number of other things, which I ended up going through with Frank. So anyways, I won't hold you up. I'll bring on Frank right now.
All right, so I'm once again joined by Frank the Tank to review our Sunday performance against GWS. But before we start, Frank, I wanted to talk to you about the crowd attendance. Just under 14,000, I think it was 13,740. I thought a pretty good crowd. I was expecting almost half of that. How did you see it?
Yeah, I thought so as well, Dean. I know there'd be other team supporters sort of laughing, saying, you know, that was a great turnout. But I thought, considering where we are, our performances of late, a long weekend, a reasonably average day weather-wise and temperature-wise, I thought 14,000 was a really good show of support for the players and the club. And there would have been at least half of those that had probably a genuine excuse not to go, but they turned up.
Yeah, especially, like you said, last on the ladder, getting flogged by 50 points plus every week for the last 9 or 10 weeks. And like you said, there's a lot of excuses not to go, but full credit to all the supporters. And I think full credit at the end, like at the end of the game, I'm not too sure how long you stayed, but a lot of supporters, probably a couple of thousand or close to it, clapped the players off, which I thought was very noble. Whether they deserved it or not is up to each person's opinion, but still to do that, that was very noble, and shows our loyalty at the moment. So we're certainly hoping that they can repay the faith, I suppose, and at least get one winner in the second half of the year. That'll be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but we'll see how we go. Well, we'll go to team selection. Now, obviously, a lot of controversy, again, with team selection. Yeah, we've had it a couple of times this year with, namely, Jaden Stevenson being dropped. And this week was the unlucky omission of Taron Thomas. Do you think that was a right call in hindsight?
Well, Dan, not knowing exactly what team standards or whatever he didn't live up to and that. So I'm only from the outside looking in. I don't have a problem with players being sent back to the twos if they've stepped out of line, whatever it was that he did. It's unfortunate, you know, because we, you know, a fit and firing Taron Thomas is what we need. But I think, mate, we discussed it the last time as well. He's been nowhere near the Taron Thomas that he was last year. Now, whether that's attitude, whether it's he's unfit, I'm not sure. But I don't really have a problem with it. I don't like it in that, you know, I want our best players out on the ground. But if they're doing stuff off the ground that jeopardises that, I don't have an issue with it.
Yeah, I'm not too sure if it was in regards to, like, the team standards were in regards to the Gold Coast game the week before. And, there was a couple of centre clearances that he was responsible for, with a number of others, that probably didn't go as hard as you'd like. So whether that was the issue, whether it was off-field stuff, I'm not too sure. There's a lot of speculation. We don't know the facts about it all. It's an interesting one in the fact, like, there's a lot of talk about Kane Turner getting dropped, who had 3 possessions against Gold Coast, who kept his spot, and then you get someone like Taron Thomas getting dropped for that sort of reason. It's an interesting balance. Like, I mean, Kane Turner's been, you know, fairly poor for a number of weeks now, and for him not to get dropped, I can understand a Taron Thomas one to a degree, but, you know, you also keeping a player in the team just because, you know, he gives best, you know, a good effort, but he's terribly out of form, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, I guess this is the bit now where I read an article not long ago where someone said David Noble's kind of walking that tightrope now where he's trying to keep his job, but he's trying to maintain standards. Look, you could make an argument that Kane Turner has not been playing well at all. The previous week, he had 3 disposals, all of them ineffective. It's hard to make an argument for him to have held his spot. But, you know, maybe he was one of the guys who was going to get dropped had Tarryn Thomas not done what he did or whatever it was he was alleged to have done. It's hard. But I don't envy selection at the moment because I know that they probably want to pick the best team, but they've also got to pull players in the line who aren't doing their bit.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah, I can understand. Like, it's, I suppose it's getting that balancing right, that if players aren't giving their best effort, yeah, fair enough, you get dropped. But there's also, you know, the players are out of form. You can't just keep playing them as well just because they give their max effort. If they're not good enough, they're not good enough at the end of the day. And, yeah, I mean, you got, you know, young Jackson Archer who gives, who'll give up, you know, based on his name, we know he's going to give maximum effort as well. So, yeah, maybe he could have. You know, you could pick him ahead of Kane Turner as well if you're going to go down that path, sort of thing. So,
I guess, just quickly, the thing that we don't know is with players such as Tarryn Thomas and Jaden Stevenson who have been dropped, whether they've been given a warning, then a second warning, then a third and final warning, and then they've been dropped for either performance on the ground or their lack of effort at training or whatever. So, I mean, Tarryn Thomas got dropped this week, but we don't know that he hasn't been spoken to over the last 2 or 3 weeks saying, mate, we need more from you. Otherwise, we're going to have to go with someone else. But again, that's just speculation.
Yeah, yeah, of course. We're not behind closed doors. And we don't know the full facts as well. But a disappointing omission, I thought at the time. So, yeah. And it's sort of... social media blew up again, as far as North Melbourne goes in that regard. So, yeah. Anyways, we'll go talk about the game. I want to talk to you about the start of the game. Now, to me, when I was watching, I thought the game was pretty much over within the first 10 minutes because it was the same sort of thing we've seen for a number of weeks now. Just giving them far too much space, dropping players far too far back. How'd you see it? We didn't kick a goal in the first quarter. We're 5 goals down and... we pretty much, the sting was out of the game already almost.
Well, Dean, you've probably watched enough North Melbourne games like me that you can sense when that sort of starts to happen, when we start to sag off the opponent and protect space. And like you, you could see it straight away that we were just prepared to give up that 5-metre start, hoping to run them down and shut them down, and they were just too good with their skills. And I don't care who the coach is or who your playing list is, you give the opposition an extra 120 uncontested disposals and you're not going to win a game of football.
And it was 43 in the first quarter. That's far too much. That's given far too much space to, you know, a team that are highly skilled.
That's effectively 4 extra players on the ground for the opposition.
Yeah.
When you're prepared to give up 40 soft touches in a quarter of football, you got to imagine how much chasing that we have to do to try and shut down space and get to those opponents. It's just a game plan or a defensive format that just seems too easy to pick apart by the opposition.
Yeah, and it's not the first time it's happened either, is it?
No. So,
yeah. And that's what I don't understand. We keep doing the same thing week in, week out. And we know it doesn't work. The opposition know how to break it down. So I don't understand this continual persistence with that sort of tactic. Our pressure rating in the first quarter was 153, which is well below the average standard. And GWS, when we did get the ball, we tried to run it out, but their pressure was too good. We turned it over, and then they go the other way, and there's one-on-ones everywhere, and they got a few goals out the back. And, it was easy pickings, really. I think possessions in the first quarter, 117-65. I felt like the game was pretty much over within the first 10 minutes. And, the sting almost went out of the game. At the start of the second quarter, I don't know if you've seen the Cornelio goal. Did you see that?
Right, sort of at the top of the goal square almost?
Yeah, the left foot snap, whereas it was a soft goal. Players got sucked into the ball instead of worrying about what he was doing. And I don't know, as soon as he kicked the goal, there was nothing. There was he gave a high five to an opponent. Even the GWS supporters didn't even cheer it. it was just like the game all of a sudden became really flat.
Yeah, and, yeah. There was a couple of instances like that, Dean, where goals were kicked and they just seemed so pedestrian and so easy that you almost sat there thinking, oh, I think he's missed because there was no roar.
But yeah, yeah.
Saw them high fiving each other and going back to the middle and going, God, that was so easy. They didn't even bother celebrating.
Exactly.
Yeah, really concerning. But as you said, mate, I think we're now accustomed to seeing these patterns pretty early. And you sense when the pressure's not there. And then when that happens, we get picked apart really quickly. And then the heads drop. And then we get what we got.
Yeah, exactly right. No, I couldn't have summed it up any better myself. And the second half, you know, like, David Noble talked about, you know, we only got outscored by 2 points. We won the last quarter and so forth. But we see it every week. Like, when the sting's gone out of the game, when the game's already won, that, of course, yeah, teams take the foot off the pedal and almost look to next week, really. And they seem to cruise to a win. Like, Harry Himmelberg was just racking up possessions for fun.
I reckon in that last quarter, Dean, I reckon they switched the ball a couple of times across half back just for fun. GWS. Yeah. I don't even reckon they were thinking of going forward. They just kind of went, look, we got four loose blokes across half back. Let's just go left to right to left to right and see how long it takes them to get the ball off us.
Yeah, I agree. Like Himmelberg, 11 possessions last quarter. Isaac Cumming, 11 possessions. Lockie Whitfield, 9. You know, they were just chipping to each other. Tom Green got a few cheapies as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was just going through the motions, really. And it was really disappointing for the supporters that did turn up. That, you know, we tried to make some noise when we got 2 goals in a row in the third quarter, but, we just couldn't get in the game and we were too far gone by then. Yep. So, yeah, it is what it is now. Who were some players you thought played well?
Well, the obvious ones, obviously, LDU played a great game. And, I think you look at guys like that and think, mate, he's playing like that and he's really swimming against the tide because, you know, he's not getting a lot of support in that midfield at the moment. So, obviously, a big tick for him. Simkin, you know, again, got a lot of the football. There's always concerns about his disposal and he made a couple of horrible decisions. That cost us goals on Sunday just with his skill errors. But, you know, at least he's there. He's tackling. He's getting the ball. And one that I thought, Dean, that look, I know in the scheme of things probably, you know, it didn't mean a lot, but I sort of really liked the effort of Tristan Cherry on Sunday. I just thought he worked that bit harder and really tried to get himself involved.
Yeah, I agree with that. I thought it was probably the best him and Goldstein worked as far as a tandem this year. Look, Tristan Cherry, 14 touches, 5 clearances. You know, look, had 27 hitouts as well. We won a hitout count quite comfortably, 60 to 13, 14 hitouts to advantage to 5. So, yeah, the ruck issue. You know, there was no ruck issue as far as the game goes. Look, Goldstein was very good, was one of our better players. Went forward and kicked 2 goals as well. So hopefully that can continue between those two because, Goldstein's certainly hit some form in the past few weeks. And Tristan Cherry, it's been a bit slow and get going. Like, I think we've talked about it. He was averaging about 3 possessions a game there for about 3 weeks. So, it was good for him to get his hands on the ball over the weekend, and I thought they were fantastic. LDU, 33 touches, 15 in the last quarter he got. So he kept going for the whole game.
Yep.
Kicked a really nice goal too, a really nice snap. 574 metres gained, 16 contested possessions, 17 uncontested. So good balance there. 6 clearances, 8 score involvements. Was clearly our best player. And probably kept the margin respectable as far as 49 points. Yeah, he certainly kept it probably a lot closer single-handedly. I thought he was clearly our best player. And probably he'd probably be leading our best and fairest at the moment, wouldn't he? Or close to it.
I think with the burst he's had the last few weeks, I think he'd certainly be up there for sure. And let's face it, Dean, he's not up against much in the BNF at the moment. We sort of don't really have anyone at a high level of maybe Todd Goldstein, I guess. Like you said, the last few weeks he's really put his hand up. But yeah, I think those two would be just about one and two.
Yeah. You got Simpkins being quite consistent throughout the year. Luke McDonald as well.
Yeah, Lukey Mack has been very good, and Scott as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Bailey Scott probably be top five at the moment, which is probably showing how well we're going. Nothing against Bailey Scott. I think he's been one of the most improved players this year. But he's another defender. And if you got defenders like McDonald and Bailey Scott in your top five and the best and fairest, it generally means the ball's played in the defensive half a fair bit, which it is. At the moment. So, it was good performances. Yeah, Sipkin, 52% disposal efficiency. Yeah, he sort of struggled with that, but kept battling. You know, he kept trying all game. He really battled hard. So, which is all he can ask for at the moment. Who were some players you thought struggled? I have a feeling I know a couple names you'll say.
Well, I mean, look, without going over, old wounds, Dean, there was a number of them at halftime, let's say, who were basically unsighted for different reasons. We know, as a forward at the moment at North, it must be a real battle. I'm a bit surprised that they didn't throw some of the players around into different positions to try and bring them into the game. Jaden Stevenson, very, very quiet early. As was Horn Francis. He was super quiet. And there was a couple of others again. Tommy Powell wasn't. Look, he seems to be a guy, when he gets the ball, he can do some great things with it, but at the moment, just not getting it enough. There were a few that I kind of really noticed hadn't given a lot.
Yeah, I mean, we had 11 players with 11 disposals or less, which is half the team. So barely got a touch. You mentioned a number of names there. Tom Powell, 7 possessions. Horn Francis, 8. Greenwood, 8. Zeeble, only 6. Jaden Stevenson got his first handball late in the second quarter, I believe.
Yeah. And like you were saying, Dean, a lot of these guys fluffed up their stats when the game was dead. When it was there, in the first 45 minutes that the heat was on, a lot of those guys were sitting on one or zero as far as disposals went. And that's just not, you're not going to win games like that.
Yeah. I mean, it might have been to do with the tactics, because they just controlled the whole tempo of the game, really. So it probably had a bit to do with that. Certain players like Stevenson. I mean, he got a bit of a Bronx cheer, and I thought that was a bit harsh, because what hope did he have? The ball's not getting in the forward line, and when it did, it was usually a terrible delivery. So, it wasn't like he was in one out situations. David Noble said after the game, we wanted to, be that lead up player. He never had that chance to be that lead up player up forward.
No.
And I'm glad he went up the field and got a few touches in the. In the second half, he only got 4, but at least he uses the ball quite well, and at least he got a few touches like that. And I think his best position is, wing, sort of half forward at the moment. So
I can't remember, Dean, the last time we had a player that was a lead-up target inside forward 50. I mean, I know we do occasionally take a mark inside 50, but I can't remember the last time we had, a lead on it, sort of out of the goal square and up the middle of the forward line that gets hit on the chest.
Yeah, probably Ben Brown would be the last one, really.
Look, I'm sure that the stats will show that, Nick Larkey's had a few, and there's been, and maybe Zerha as well, but it's just such a rarity the way we move the ball into the forward line to see a fast sort of lead into the forward 50 and the player get honoured, that I don't know what he thought Jaden Stevenson was going to achieve as a lead-up small forward, but there you go.
Yeah, well, you can only do so much when the way we play. I mean, we're built to score, probably at max 10 goals, 10 to 12 goals, really, at the moment, the way we're playing. Yep. We're not really given our chance to, a chance to win. And I feel like the score seems to be similar every week. It seems like every week for the past 4 to 6 weeks, it feels like we've lost 100 to 50 every week, to be honest with you.
Well, you're probably close to being spot on, Dean. Yeah, it is roughly around that. So, yeah.
What do you make of David Noble's comments post-game? He talked about Kane Turner doing a good job on Josh Kelly. I don't know what he was watching. Josh Kelly was had 27 touches.
I honestly thought maybe he was I don't know what he was thinking. He, obviously, the way he assesses it is different to me. But, I mean, Kane Turner, okay, he had, I think, 8 disposals. 2 of them were kicks. Now, he's not a renowned handballer. He's not super creative with his handball. So, you know, he walks away with 8 disposals, 2 kicks. And Josh Kelly, I think, went at 80% and had 27. And, yeah, honestly. And the most concerning thing, Dean, is a number of times I saw Josh Kelly run past an opponent or run towards a teammate, sorry, for the 1-2 or an easy give. And when he's peeled off and decided, I'm not going to get it, Kane Turner peels off with him rather than attack the ball carrier.
Yeah. No, it was a bit strange. Like, he gave him, you know, look, I don't think he can keep up with him. I don't think it was a good matchup for him. He's not quick enough.
And I just think at some point during that, halfway during that second quarter, I don't know what Kelly was on at, say, 10, 15 minutes into that second quarter, but they couldn't have possibly been sitting in the coach's box going, no, we're winning this battle.
Yeah, they persisted
with it.
Yeah, I agree. But, I mean, what can Kane Turner do? It's not like you can, oh, we'll break the tag. He's going to be this offensive weapon. No, is he? Like, he's not. No. He doesn't give you much else, though, does he?
No, and that's the problem with Kane Turner is you can't put him in a forward pocket and have the opposition go, well, we can't leave this guy on his own. He'll kick 3 type thing. So he's become, well, he probably always was pretty one-dimensional. But now he's either a defensive sort of lockdown mid or you know, defensive forward, or he's nothing else. But I can't see the day that they, you know, put him in the forward line and he kicks 3 for us off, you know, half a dozen kicks.
No, it would take him all year to kick 3 goals, to be honest. Yeah, nothing against him. He's just, at the moment, he shouldn't be getting a game. Look, that might be a bit harsh on the kid. But, you know, I mean, it's nothing against him, but, you know, he's out of form. Well, because, you know, we've got to reward players that are in form in the reserves. We've got Matt McInnes, who's, you know, getting a few touches in the reserves. Yep. You know, even Jackson Archer, maybe. Or you know, try Boston Oblagi is a forward. I don't know. But,
yeah.
You know, like, you can't just keep rewarding players that are struggling for form. So I find that a bit bizarre that he's still getting the game, to be honest with you. So. But, yeah, what do I know, I guess? I'm not on a selection panel. You also talked a lot about, you know, players guarding space instead of their direct opponent. You sort of said, oh, you know, back in junior football, you know, forwards play in front and defenders, you know, play from behind and stay tight to their opponent. Surely that comes down to the coach. Because he, you know, because the players are obviously confused whether they have to zone off or whether they stay on their direct opponent. Hence why we're getting so many uncontested possessions against us every week. So I find that a bit bizarre that he's saying that. Like, he's sort of almost having a go at the players when it comes down to tactics, doesn't it?
Well, I think you and I have said this, Dean. Either the message is confusing or the players aren't buying into it, or they're not good enough to buy into the game plan that he's trying to implement. Either way, it's not working. Whatever the message is, whatever the structure is that he's trying to implement, the player, it is not working with this current list of players. And that's, and I mean, I saw reports today from a couple of the media services just saying they watched the game and they just could not believe what they were seeing.
Defensively,
it just made no sense at all where they would leave 2 and 3 opponents on their own and guard space 15 metres away. And
yeah. Is it too complicated the way he's trying to teach him at the moment? Make it simple. Like, just say, look, stick to your opponent.
It's either too complicated or the players aren't buying in mentally. Now, why that is, well, you and I can speculate for days and weeks and months whether he's lost the playing group, as they say. But one thing's for sure is, if they're doing what he's asking them to do, then it's a flawed game plan. If they're not doing what he's asking them to do, then there's an issue with the coach.
Do you think there's any way back for him here? Do you think, like, I mean, I don't think he'll coach next year, to be honest with you. I find it hard to believe. But do you think there's a way he could come back? from this? Like, we've obviously lost, I don't know, how many we lost now? 10 in a row, 11 in a row.
11.
A lot of them, yeah, 11. And a lot of them uncompetitive. And even the win we got was pretty much against the Waffle team, so we're lucky to get that.
Yep.
Do you think there's any way he can come back from this?
No, not really, Dean. I mean, yeah, mathematically, sure, we could win 8 of our last, 10 or so games, it'd be a Cinderella story, but I just can't see it happening. In fact, I mean, I think, Dean, progressively each week we're getting worse in different aspects of the game. Less pressure, less competitive. I just honestly cannot see where the next win's coming from. So I'm expecting, Dean, probably something along the lines of, they have a board meeting at some point, if not the one that's coming up this week, one in a month's time, where they don't offer him a contract and he does the, oh, well, if you're not going to keep me next year, there's no point me staying on at this stage. And we have a coach exit, in the back half of the season, is what I think will happen.
Yeah, look, we're almost banking on that at the moment. Look, I can't see him, turning this around where we're going to all of a sudden become a competitive team, win games. Because you probably have to win, I think, at least two or three more games for the rest of the year and put in some other competitive performances against teams like, I'm not so sure, we've still got Essendon, Gold Coast and so forth to come up. Teams that are around us. He's going to have to really turn it around. I suppose one player that could turn it around that can bring the club closer together is Ben Cunnington. He has talked about him possibly coming back. Like, we're a different team when he's played. I mean, we are asking a lot. He's got obviously a lot of health issues and, he seems clear of that. Touch wood and thank God for that. But he's probably one player that could change the fortunes of his football club, but that's asking a lot. And if he's good enough to do that, then full power to Ben Cunnington. But I can't see a way back to Dave.
I think with Ben Cunnington, Dean, I think if he plays in the second half of the year, there'll be no lead up or anything. We'll just find out on the Thursday night that he's playing reserves or something like that. I don't think he's the kind of guy that will want a 2-week lead-in to say, oh, look, I'll be back in 3 weeks and have to face the media and all that. I think it'll be a really quiet announcement, short, sharp, Ben's going to play a half in the reserves or something. I think spiritually, him being out there might inspire or change the attitude of some of the players that are just stagnating. So that could be a real positive, not so much what he delivers himself, but how he makes the rest of the playing group feel. Like you, I just can't see any way that David Noble survives to the start of next year.
Is it? Do you think we'll go after Clarkson if that happens?
Well, we'd have to go after Clarkson. Whether we get him is a completely different story. But if it whatever happens, whatever transpires over the next 18 months, if it comes out that we didn't even approach him or call him, I think that would be just pure lunacy. I want to hear whatever happens that the club spoke to him, interviewed him or whatever, and he steadfastly said, no, I do not want to coach North. So I understand if he looks at it and sort of says, look, this is a really, really long-term project and it's not really what I want to do. I understand that, but we need to speak to him and get his opinion on where the list is at and whether he thinks he's up to the job. If he says no, we move on to the next candidate.
Who do you think would look at as far as next candidate? We've tried the untried in Reece Shaw. We've tried to go a bit of an experienced coach who hasn't coached for a long time, David Noble. Where would you go next after that?
I think Mark Williams would be a guy I'd be interested in speaking to.
Yeah, that's not a bad choice. He seems to go to clubs that, and they become successful. Just as the guy in the background, he's been at Melbourne, Richmond, and so forth in the past few years, and they've all,
he's another guy, Dean, that I think when he looks you in the eye and he demands something, you can't look back at him and go, well, you never did that as a player. So who are you to tell me that this is what I need to do? He's done it at the top level. He's taken clubs to the ultimate. I think he'd be the kind of guy that would have enough ruthless edge that he wouldn't accept you know, half-hearted efforts, and he'd be tough enough and understanding enough to be able to get the best out of a young group. So he'd be a guy I think that would definitely be worth talking to.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they didn't. And there was talk about him a while ago that we might look at him, I think, under Rhys Shaw. But Rhys Shaw did a really good job in the second half of the year when he took over, and you couldn't go against him. We did look at John Longmire a number of years ago as well. So I'd be surprised if we didn't make the call out to Clarkson and, you know, at least approach that. The one after that, I'm not too sure. I mean, they may even look at Nathan Buckley. Who knows?
Nathan Buckley. I mean, I'm not a big Ross Lyon fan, but obviously he's got the experience and the nous. I'm not a big fan of his game plan sort of thing, but I think they need to approach, if it goes down that path, I think they need to approach everyone and get a clear understanding on where these guys are as far as wanting to coach. Rather than just sort of assume that, oh, look, you know, he said in the media he didn't want to coach, so we didn't speak to him.
Yeah, no, that's right. So we'll see what happens. I suppose, you know, a lot will come out in the next few weeks, and obviously performances will dictate how soon he goes. I don't mean to be harsh on Noble. I really want him to succeed because I hate seeing my football team lose every week, but it's hard to see way back. It's never happened before. You know, generally when teams play this bad, there's only one option you can go. You can't sack the whole list. So, yeah, generally it means you've lost the playing group, and that's pretty much it. It's almost curtains after that. So, we'll find out more over. Yeah, hopefully we can get a bit of resilience into the team second half of the year, and we can turn it around. But it's hard to see from here on in.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll stop talking about him anyway and the job that he's going to lose probably. But we'll move forward. Obviously, we're going to talk about Jason Orne Francis. What's going on there? What do you believe is happening? Obviously, very poor on the weekend, 8 disposals. There was a little bit of an argument with Todd Gossley. Not there, really. I mean, that was overblown. That was just, talking a bit. Yeah, probably frustrated. Should we be worried about him?
Well, look, I mean, he's clearly not enjoying his football at the moment. But, I mean, I don't know anyone that would play in 11 uncompetitive games and come off the ground, with a smile on their face. So I get that he's frustrated and he's a young kid. So, I'd be worried. I'd still want the club to back itself to get him to turn around next year and enjoy his footy with us and want to stay long term. And if that doesn't work, what I'd hope we'd do is something along the lines of Geelong did with Tim Kelly, and sort of say, look, if you want him, either you pay what we think he's worth or we let him go into the draft and you don't get him. Because if you remember, that's what West Coast did with Tim Kelly in the whole, we're not going to give you 2 first round picks for him. Geelong made him stay and play that second year and then went back to West Coast again and said, well, you know, here we are again, 2 first round picks or you don't get him.
Yeah. I mean, even if the rumours are true and he asked for a trade at the end of the year, I don't think it's worth trading him at the end of the year. You give it another 12 months. Yeah, we've seen Tristan Sherry last year ask for a trade. Now, all of a sudden, he's re-signed for 3 years. We've seen Josh Dunkley ask for it and then he stayed at the Bulldogs. We're not trading. This is a generational talent. You can't just leave him.
This is what concerns me, Dean. You're not trading him and I'm not trading him, but I'm worried about what our football department does and whether they go, oh, look, we'll take a second round pick and a box of magic beans or something like that. That's what I'm really worried about, is that we don't stand our ground. Adelaide did with Dangerfield when Geelong offered him the restricted free agency contract, and Adelaide matched it just so Geelong had to trade with Adelaide and they would get a better deal. You know, that's what I want our club to show, is we want to keep him. If you want him, you've got to convince us that it's worth letting him go either this year or next year.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think you want to leave anyway, to be honest with you. I think the media are just, it's just lazy journalism. They see what they see on the field and they think, oh, well, he wants to trade. You know, they don't have any facts, and we don't know what's going on. Yeah, he's gone away with the boys for a players only thing, which will be good. They'll be able to bond, which will be good for him. But yeah, I think he's just an immature kid at the moment. He's an 18-year-old kid that's not used to losing. He's grown up junior footy, playing successful teams. This is the first time he's ever really started losing, and he's not handling it. Yeah, I think correct. It's just as simple as that.
Mate, I'd love to. I don't know the stats, but I'd love to go back through his career over the last couple of years at the Sandful. I'm not sure he's lost 11 games in 2 years, much less 11 in a row. So it's a completely new headspace for him. He's under the microscope over here. He's in the press, not by his choice. Like literally every hour, there's a new story on him, and he probably doesn't even remember the words to the song. So I think. Yeah, I want to see what his attitude's like if and when we win 4 games in a row. That's what I'll judge him on. If he comes off after we win 4 in a row next year or something and he's still arguing with teammates, then I'll go, right, the kid's clearly not happy.
Yeah, and things change. I think he's just a sore loser, to be honest with you. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, he's just a kid. He's not used to losing. He's frustrated. He's frustrated with his teammates. He's frustrated with opposition. He's obviously taken a hit on Josh Kelly on the weekend, just a swinging arm, yep. Which has cost him a couple of weeks. But now he can just focus on training, getting back to enjoyment. And I think it'd be good. I think the buy's come at the right time for him because his effort wasn't there on Sunday. Like, we've seen those great chases he does. He didn't do that once on the weekend. And, he just wasn't in the right headspace to play on the weekend. And that happens. You know, we've seen that with Corey McKernan when he didn't get a possession in one game. So, I think the media has just overblown it ridiculously at the moment. I've never seen a pressure on a number one pick like this ever, I don't think. I can't remember the last time a number one pick had this much pressure on him. Can you? Yeah,
well, this much negative pressure on him that it all seems to be about him being unhappy and him fighting and him moody and stuff like that. And I sort of think, obviously we're pretty protective of our players and I just sort of think, let the kid go. It's going to be a bit of a break and a bye. It gets him out of the limelight and then, hopefully he comes back with a refreshed attitude and, maybe we can pinch a win while he's off, and sort of rejuvenate him, and his enthusiasm to get back out there. So, let's see what happens.
Well, I keep looking back on the fact that he slept with the North Melbourne jump when he got drafted. He's got a North Melbourne mouth guard. He's, it was only a few weeks ago. He was very passionate. He's standing up for his teammates against Carlton on a Friday night. So I don't think that's, I think he's just a bit of a, he's struggling a bit with losing at the moment. I think that'll turn around over time. And if we can get and this is the crucial point. I don't know if David Noble's lost him. Going back to that, I don't know if David Noble's lost him. Whether we need a new coach for him, if you get an Alistair Clarkson, all of a sudden you might see a completely different kid and player. So you just get that. He might not. This is me speculating, of course, and talking a bit of shit. But he might have just lost a bit of respect for David Noble. Who knows? As a coach,
And that's, when the coach comes out and says that he had to apologise to the playing group for being too harsh and stuff like that, you've got Stevenson struggling, Thomas struggling, Horn Francis looks flat. There's a few others in that boat. You just sort of think, I just don't know that the message is getting through or, they've, as you said, they've lost respect for him as a coach. But, I agree. I would keep him. Unless someone makes a ridiculous godfather offer of first, 3 first round picks in the top 10 for him or something like that, I would insist that we stay with him, take him through another preseason. Let's see who's coaching next year and see if we can get some wins under the belt and then assess his enjoyment of football then.
Well, it can turn around pretty quick, and we certainly hope that it happens sooner rather than later. So, I'm slightly concerned about him, but I'm not too concerned. I'm more worried about the overall team performance at the moment.
Absolutely, mate. And that's the thing. That's what people sort of, I think, are not glossing over, but the media are acting out like everyone else at North comes off the ground smiling and high-fiving, and then you got Horn Francis in the corner dragging his bottom lip. when the entire side is coming off, you know, I'd imagine sitting in that room just staring at the floor thinking there's another loss.
Yeah, I agree. I want to talk to you about Jack Zeeble. Now, obviously struggled again on the weekend. Why haven't they put him back in the back line? He was very good in the back line last year. He's played three games there this year. He struggled against Brisbane. That was the only game he really struggled. Obviously, there's a matchup in Hawthorn where he's had to play a bit taller and struggled in a couple of one-on-ones, but wasn't overly bad. Why haven't they put him back in the back line again?
I guess maybe at some sort of a team balance with Hall coming back in. You know, maybe that fills that sort of, you know, another spot at half back. I mean, now with his injury, we'll get to, you know, reshuffle the deck for a period of time and see. But yeah, he's kind of struggling to find a position at the moment, Jack, unfortunately. I think he gets exposed horribly for leg speed.
Yeah, I thought, because, you know, he's been, David Noble used him as that Luke Hodge sort of general type in the back line last year. It was very good. You know, well, came third in the best and the fairest.
Yep.
I think he was leading the best and the fairest halfway through the year or something last year as a, rebound defender. He uses the ball quite well. I'm just surprised they haven't gone, at least tried it again. Try and get him some footy because at the moment, you know, you don't want to play as a forward. Because when the ball's going in, you know, you're getting 30-odd entries a game. It's making it really hard for him. So you're not giving him opportunities. And, Aaron Hall, you talked about then, he just came back in this week. So there's a number of weeks there when we didn't have that defender, that sort of general in the back line. So I thought at least, you know, give him a try, let him get a feel of the ball, get his confidence back, and then you could probably chuck him back forward again when we're playing a bit better. Because at the moment, he's getting written off. His career's getting written off at the moment. Yeah. You know, Dave King only a couple of weeks ago said he wouldn't get a game in any other club. So I'm just finding it a bit surprising. He's not throwing the magnets around again.
Well, as I said to you at the start of the podcast, Dean, you know, I would have moved Jaden Stevenson onto a wing or something like that fairly early when it looked like he was struggling up forward. There were other moves we could have made that it was clear that we had no momentum or control of the game that we could have done to try and wrestle, you know, or at least make them reshuffle their magnets and go, oh, we didn't expect that. But we really did nothing for like three quarters. And Jack Zeeble was another one of those that, yeah, you could have thrown him back, throw him into the middle for, periods of time just to, you know, shake things up.
Yeah, like I said at the start, we just seem to be doing the same thing week in, week out. And, it's the definition of insanity. So, pretty much, you're expecting a different result when you're doing the same thing every week, letting teams get uncontested possessions and do what they like.
Well, now that Jack's out for, what have they said, 5 weeks? I guess now that we get to, you know, reset and see a different, you know, group and see what we do there.
Yeah, I didn't even know that Jack Zeeble was out for 5 weeks. You just told me then. So on Twitter last couple of hours.
News, Dean, and only sort of came out about an hour ago. He sustained a facial fracture in the dying minutes of Sunday's game. So he's going in for surgery, I think, tomorrow, and he'll be out for 5 weeks.
Oh, there you go. I've just seen it now. It's just come up on the Twitter page then. So, that's not good for him. So, what can you do? I did see that now. So, there you go. Well, breaking news there, Frank, so I'm glad I got you on for that. What do you hope to see? Like, we've obviously got the bye this week. What do you hope to see in the second half of the year
I just want to see our guys get back to the form that they were showing the second half last year. I think the most frustrating thing for North supporters this year is that the players have continued to go backwards over the last few weeks. And that's the concerning thing, is that I think we all thought Zerha would get a little bit better, Thomas would get a little bit better, Powell, LDU, all those guys would increase 5 or 10% on their ability. and fitness, and we really start to see, you know, that sort of future north. And nearly all of those players have gone backwards. So I would just love to see some really consistent footy from some of the young kids. So see a game where, you know, Thomas, Powell, LDU, Horn Francis, they all get 20-plus disposals or 25-plus disposals, something like that, and we really get to see what we could achieve if we put our mind to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's got to be a better vision than what we've got at the moment. We've got to set goals in the second half of the year, and they've got to be a bit better than what we're... Yeah, you know, I don't know if he's what he's talking about with these advanced metrics or something like that, but they've got to be higher goals and advanced metrics. Let's just do the simple things right. Let's not get smashed by uncontested possession up by 100 every week and so forth.
Dean, I don't care what your advanced metrics say. If you're giving the opposition 120 uncontested disposals more than your team, I don't care. Unless the advanced metrics is that we're kicking 20 goals a game, I'm not interested in the advanced metrics. Like you said, let's just try and stop the opposition getting so much of the ball, and then we'll worry about the advanced metrics.
Yeah, 100%. I couldn't agree more with that, Frank. It's probably not a bad way to finish it off. Unless you wanted to add anything else, Frank?
No, mate. I look forward to the break, and let's hope that we can make a fist of it against Adelaide in Tassie in a couple of weeks, and that our next chat is, something of a more exciting tone.
Yeah, hopefully we can, you know, win 100 to 50 against someone else instead of being the opposite. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, you probably remember that game down at a few years ago down in Tassie when we kicked, I think, 10 goals in the first quarter against Adelaide against the odds.
I do remember that. They were undefeated at that time.
They were red hot favourites against us. We don't have Jared Waite, who contributed pretty heavily that day, but let's hope that we can do something along those lines and have a win in the next couple of weeks.
Well, we probably should make a call to him and see how he's going. It'd probably be pretty handy right now. So. Yeah,
couldn't hurt, mate. Couldn't hurt, that's for sure.
No, definitely not. Yeah, anyways, Frank, appreciate you coming on the show and having a chat. It's always a good therapy session. So, it's a lot cheaper than the psychiatrist. So, thanks again, Frank.
No worries, mate. Always enjoy coming on, and stay safe.
So thanks to Frank for coming on the show once again. Like I said, lots of discussion points, and Frank brought up some really interesting points as well. That's it for this show. I will be back tomorrow. We're just going to do a bit of a preview of the upcoming AFLW season. I'm just going to talk in general about the AFLW game and where that's at. I'll probably be back with Lozza, which I got on for AFLW previews a fair bit last season, so I'll bring her back. I wouldn't mind going through a different tone rather than always talking about the men's team. And it seems like a broken record at the moment. We seem to be going through 50-point losses every week at the moment. So, it would be good to talk about something a bit more positive tomorrow. But, that's the way it's going at the moment. So, anyways, thanks for all the likes, subscribes you lovely listeners have done. Once again, a great share, a massive share to the supporters that turned up on Sunday. We've got the best supporters in the world, really, when you think about it. I mean, the fact that we've lost, 11 games in a row or whatever we've lost, and, last nine have been 47 points plus, and to clap the players off the ground, it's really noble of all you people that did that. So, can't speak highly enough of that sort of effort. Keep supporting the show as much as you can. Tell your friends. Keep retweeting, keep commenting, do whatever you can. I really appreciate it. So, it's definitely growing, and I'm getting more listeners each week, which is very important. Don't forget, you can listen to Troy Makepeace last Thursday. That was a really good insight. It was a bit of a game preview, but it's a good insight into talking about his review of the Gold Coast game and a number of other things as well that's going on at the club. So, he's just another supporter like me and you, but, it's good to get an ex-player's perspective on everything that's going on at the club. So, definitely check out that last episode as well. Anyways, that's it for this show. Like I said, I'll probably be back tomorrow night, do an AFLW season preview of, a lot of controversy there with our women's team as well, like losing a few big-name players, which is probably going to happen when new teams come into the competition. You know, we lost three of the four through new franchises, basically, like Hawthorn, Essendon, and so forth. Lost a couple to Sydney, a couple of AFLW players as well. So, yeah, I'll look forward to chatting to Loz about that. Anyways, that's it for this show. I will leave a shout out to Wayne Schwass. Bye for now.